Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, everything went swimmingly down in Tampa last Sunday as the Lions triumphed over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 20-6. This week, they face off against the Baltimore Ravens at MB&T Bank Stadium. I think it's still called that.
Yeah.
They all change so often now.
They do. They do.
You know, Eric, you're surprised, you know, I guess not surprising to you. You were big on the Lions this past Sunday, but you know, the Tampa was a 3-1 first place team in their division, and the Lions just went and took care of business.
Yeah, I felt like when it was in the game, it felt like, you know, it was close, right? Like you felt like, okay, they're within striking distance, or you could see a way for Tampa to find their way back in. At the same time, the Lions were, they kept their distance and they did what they needed to do. They never really faltered. The third quarter is always a struggle for them, but once you got out of that third quarter, it was pretty easy. And so, yeah, it never really got to that point where it was close. It just kind of felt like they were like a step away from it getting to the point where it was getting close, if that makes any sense.
Right.
So like I was kind of waiting, like if something goes wrong, then I'll get a little panicky, and then nothing ever went wrong. And so I think that's the getting comfortable being uncomfortable, to quote Dan Miller. I think I'm still getting used to that, you know? And at the end of the day, they won by 14 points, their fourth game in a row, winning by 14 points, their third first place team that they beat this year. And they've got another first place team on the docket in Baltimore.
Yeah, so let's start getting to that now. What's going to make it even more difficult this Sunday is the injured list. So let's start there. Running back Jahmyr Gibbs, hamstring injury, limited Wednesday and Thursday, although things are looking up for him to potentially play Sunday. They're going to need to be.
Yeah. It's if you read between the lines, you know, Campbell's been hinting at this. Like, I almost wonder if he might have been ready to go last week, but they were like wanting to be extra cautious with him just to be sure. No reason to rush him back last week when they had two healthy running backs, but Montgomery goes down and all of a sudden, not having Gibbs available becomes a difficult, situation to be in. And so I do think Gibbs will come back. And I think he could get a full on Friday, or even if he gets a limited, I still think he's probably ticketed for that starting running back role.
And that's because starting running back David Montgomery with his rib injury did not practice Wednesday or Thursday. And as I think Coach Campbell put it, we're going to be missing him for a while.
Yeah. So it could be, this week and then maybe next week and then through the bye after that. And then, hopefully you're getting him back by the Chargers. And with a rib injury, it's really like the cartilage in between the rib injury that's causing him the problem. It's just a matter of rest at this point. So it's possible he returns for the Raiders. That extra playing on Monday night that extra day might, come in handy. But my kind of gut is he's probably going to be out a couple of weeks through the bye, and we'll see. Still an outside chance he goes to IR, which wouldn't be ideal, but I guess there is an outside chance at that too.
I was watching it on TV, I was hoping at first, like, hopefully he just had his wind knocked out of him. See how he landed on the ball. It's like, hopefully it's just wind knocked out, but no, alas. All right. Running back Craig Reynolds, who came in for Montgomery once he went down, hamstring and toe injury himself, did not practice Wednesday, limited on Thursday.
So he returned, which is great, right? And I guess I should have pointed out that Wednesday they did a walkthrough. So when all the Wednesdays are all just estimates. So they were estimating that if they had to have practiced on Wednesday, that Craig probably wouldn't have been able to practice. But he was back and practicing on Thursday. So it's possible maybe he would have been able to go on Wednesday and then they just were projecting it wrong. Either way, he's back and he's practicing, and that's a good sign, especially with Gibbs still being limited. You want to have as many horses in the stable as you can get, and so they'll have at least two. Now, I didn't note any transactions on our, you know, we usually start with the transactions. I didn't note any because no regular season or regular active roster moves were made, but they did sign Mohamed Ibrahim back and to the practice squad. So it's possible him or Divine Azigbo, who was called up last week. It's possible at least one or maybe both of those guys end up getting called up for this game as well, depending on how Craig and Jameer's health works out.
That'll be very interesting if it does happen. We're going to talk about the offensive line in a second, but, you know, behind that strong offensive line, even guys that are way down the depth chart have a decent shot at contributing.
Yeah,
certainly. Tight end. Oh, sorry. Tight end. No, Sam LaPorta. Yeah. Calf injury, limited, Wednesday, Thursday.
I think it's just management, really. He played through the injury last week, so this is really just management with him. He should be good, too.
Tight end, James Mitchell, hamstring, limited, Wednesday, Thursday.
So, like Gibbs, he missed two games, and then he's now coming back. So, the odds are he's trending in the right direction. Come back, probably take over that tight end three role, which is really only like 6 to 10 snaps a game anyways. But he's probably going to be available for that.
Left guard, Jonah Jackson, ankle injury, did not practice Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah, that's not as good, right? Especially if they were projecting him not to play, then he doesn't. With only one day left, it's very possible he misses. If that's the case, they'll probably go back to Kayode Oshika. The message that the Lions are giving us as far as Hal Vitae is that he's healthy, but he's not like fully ready to go, which kind of indicates maybe it's like an acclimation thing. Maybe it's just a pain management thing, but he's healthy and he's medically cleared, which is why Hal Vitae isn't on the injury report, but he's not quite there in order to play every snap of a game. And so with Vitae not quite there, and they went with Oshika, and it's very possible he gets a start again.
So, you know, all that, well, we got to mention Frank Ragnow, center, toe injury, limited Wednesday, Thursday. We'll say that every week all season. But, you know, that totality of all those injuries, you know, the Lions only rushed for 22 times for 40 yards against the Buccaneers. You know, like, there's a good chance they could end up being stymied in Baltimore as well, and leaving the offense to go out there one-dimensional, which is, I guess, a tougher proposition against the Ravens than it was the Buccaneers.
Yeah, I think Gibbs gives you more freedom that you can still establish the run in a different way. Maybe a little bit more outside zone as opposed to a gap. But, Craig can do it, but it's harder for Craig to do it against tougher defenses. Tampa was a very tough defense. Ravens are a very tough defense. Both of them very good against the run. And so the Lions aren't going to give up on the run by any means, but they did show against the Bucs that when they are limited in one area, they can adapt and adjust and make some noise in the passing game, find a different way to move the ball, like via throws, like short throws that kind of supplement the run. And that's what they did. And it worked. Goff had a pretty good game by the end of it. Ideally, you can get the offensive line back in order. Offensive line versus Ravens defensive line is going to be a big storyline this week.
Defensively, Brian Branch, ankle injury, limited Wednesday, Thursday.
Like Mitchell and Gibbs, missed a couple of games. Looks like he's trending back. He said in the locker room to the media today that he is going to be ready to go.
Defensive full health on Sunday. Final injury report, quarterback Teddy Bridgewater knee injury, limited Thursday. Kind of surprising to see.
Yeah, that was a late add. He came out of nowhere because he didn't he wasn't injured on Wednesday, or at least not projected to be injured. He hasn't really done anything outside of practice. So chances are he's injured at practice, could have been at today's practice. And if that's the case, you got to kind of keep him on the back burner there and say, hey, if it's a late week injury, maybe he's not available. If he's not available, you may have to call David Blau up, you know, like for an elevation for the game as to be a backup. But I mean, technically Hendon Hooker is available, but he's not practiced at all.
He's not available. Stop it.
I mean, he could activate him, but he hasn't practiced on an as part of an NFL team at all. Not once, but you know, okay, so it would be Blau. But yeah, it's it was a little bit surprising to see Teddy there. But yeah, I look, defensive full strength is something. That's going to be something important.
All right, let's mop up talking about this Bucs game, 20-6 victory, as we pointed out before. Goff, spectacular, 30 of 44 in the air, 353 yards, a pair of touchdowns. And those two touchdowns, probably the most exciting two Lions touchdowns this season.
Two of, yeah, for sure. Because a lot of the touchdowns the Lions have run this year have been hand Montgomery to ball and just let him bowling ball into the end zone, right? Like he's done that five times. I think they've only scored 8 or 10 or something like that touchdowns on the year. So maybe it's a bit more, but I had it written down somewhere, but I don't have it. I don't have it handy, but I got a lot of notes for this game. Cause this, like I said, it's a tough matchup, but yeah, certainly this was super, these were very exciting touchdowns. You saw a great block by Craig Reynolds to free up Amon-Ra St. Brown, easily one of the best blocks I've seen in a long time. And, you know, St. Brown goes against the grain. He's, you know, the play design is for him to get the ball and then just jet upfield and try and get into a fourth and short situation. Instead, he misdirects and starts running laterally, which is what he's not supposed to do. And then he starts looking for blocks. And then Craig comes in and sends the defensive back a good 5 yards. I mean, it was a legitimate 5 yards. It was impressive.
He, you know, Amon-Ra said that he didn't see Reynolds. He just saw him as a, see, like when I saw him running parallel to the line of scrimmage and then see Reynolds fly in, you know, none of us knew where Reynolds was unless you were in Raymond James Stadium, but none of us watching could actually see that. I just assume it's like, oh, he must've saw him the whole time. He must've knew exactly what was happening. Cause that's why he was, you know, going parallel down the line of scrimmage, and no, that's not what happened. Apparently that's not what he said. You know,
there was another block that he was running towards, but there was still two defensive backs outside of that block. So he was really, I think, hoping to cut off that block. And then when he realized, certainly I think he could have, he got pretty fortunate that Craig came in and lowered the boom.
And the other one, Jameson Williams, you know, that after we probably just, what was it, one play away from kind of cursing him for not coming back and kind of catching that ball, you know, he streaks down the left side there, you know, he runs to the post, gets about 3 yards on the defensive back, nice little Goff under throw. He turns one way. He has plenty of time to stop, turn around the other way, and make a lovely touchdown catch. Finally getting everybody to relax on their Jameson Williams anxiety.
Yeah, that's what he brings, right? That's what he's going to bring from now on. And the threat of that is going to open defenses up because now that's on tape and defenses are going to see that. And they're going to have to be conscious of the fact that when he cuts it loose, they've got to have at least one guy back there. And we've seen this even in college. Like even if you get one guy over the top of him and he gets going, if he gets the inside angle on you, it's over. And the hard part is if you put him in the middle of the field in the slot, like kind of what we saw in this play, depending on which angle he takes, he can always get the inside angle. Like it's almost an impossible coverage situation for the safety. And that's what you saw. You saw the safety couldn't, you know, was trying to get over the top of them, couldn't get underneath, and then just you can't keep up. There's not a defensive back, there's not a safety in the league that's going to be able to run stride for stride with Jameson Williams. And so now defenses have to worry about that. Side note, I found my note, 14 touchdowns, 14.
No, it's 20.
It is? Wow. Yeah. I had 14. Why
they scored 42 points against the Panthers? Well, you know, like, because when you said 10, it's like, you know, it's been six games already. Like,
I know.
I have way more than 10. A lot. The 9 14. On the ground, 6 from Montgomery, 2 from Goff, 1 from I lost.
Oh, that's
1
that's
from Doug Reynolds, and then 11 through the air.
I think I'm forgetting the Goff ones, but my goodness, where am I? Am I missing a whole game? I must be.
You're probably missing the Carolina game. It's 21 total touchdowns. The Brian Branch interception return, that would be
that makes
21. But I know we're not really talking about that.
Man, all right. I thought I was low on it, and I guess I was way under.
Flipping over to the other side of the ball.
Yes,
Tampa was, you know, held at bay, trying to run the ball. Although, you know, their running offense is not that impressive to begin with. You know, that Rashad White, he's not the greatest running back.
Yeah. Yeah. They had some running back injuries. Their system was not, like, they're going to push the system, but they're not really great at executing it right now. Right. They're still working their way through their first year play, their first year offensive coordinator, they were still kind of getting their rhythm. And, you know, you're going to see a similar thing, I think, today in this week's game. You got another first year coordinator with the team, and there's, you know, some things that have to be worked out. And so hopefully that trend kind of carries, but the Lions were focused on stopping the run. They almost focused on stopping the run to a detriment to themselves, because they wanted to, they didn't want to give up the run. So they were willing to let Baker try and beat them. And sure enough, I guess that game plan worked, right? Because, you know, Baker overthrew some plays. He was off his platform. We talked about last week how if you keep Baker in the pocket, he's not as good as when he's on the run. And that's the Lions tried to execute that, right? And so when they did, they Baker's throws were definitely off. And so the game plan worked. And another really low yardage output on the ground for a Lions opponent. Lions have the best run defense in the league through 6 weeks. That's a startling contrast to where they were a year ago.
Last season, all the way through the last few years. You pointed out trying to contain the rushing game, which they outgained the Lions on the ground. I don't know. There's no real news there, but it kind of hurt them. As you kind of pointed out in the pass rush, Julian Aquara picking up the only sack for the Lions. But like you said, they kept Baker in the pocket. They didn't let him move around and make anything happen. He only threw for 200 yards. And, you know, that offense really didn't produce anything for the entire game.
Right. That's a really, you know, that's a real good feather in the cap for the Lions.
All right. Any other thoughts about the Buccaneers you want to add?
No, I think
the crowd, the Lions crowd, the pro Lions crowd.
That was certainly fun. But I mean, we kind of projected that, right? Being in Florida and stuff like that.
Snowbirds down there. Yep.
Yeah. That made a lot of sense. At the same time, we saw, I don't know if we're going to get that same kind of turnout in Baltimore, right?
That was a question I was going to have for you.
Like,
will there be a lot of ex-Detroiters, or just people going on trips, going to Baltimore? I mean, they sell out. They're, you know, they've been a good team the entire time they've been in Baltimore. It's not like there's going to be tons of extra seats for Lions fans to snatch up.
Yeah, I think that's going to be hard. And the Ravens haven't had a game at home in 3 weeks. So, like, because Actually, I don't remember if the Titans game in overseas was a home game technically for the Ravens, or if it
Yeah,
was an
it
away
doesn't
game.
really count.
I don't recall. But I mean, they haven't been in their home stadium in 3 games, so those fans, I'm sure, will be itching to get a good look at the Ravens again.
All right, so let's get our good look at the Ravens. This is the second game. Is it only the second game of the season where the Lions aren't favored? They weren't favored against Kansas City, and then I believe they were favored from
Yeah,
then on out. Yeah.
correct. And
So,
they'll probably be favored for almost every game from now on as well.
Lions are +3. It opened at +2.5. So if you're feeling good about the Lions straight up, they're giving you 3 points in Vegas.
It started at 2.5, which I thought was kind of surprising. And then it shifted to 3, which is even more surprising, I guess, to me. Could be the fact that the Lions are short on a couple of key players like Montgomery. But for me, I don't know. I mean, you always talk about the fact that you give 3 points to the home team type of thing.
Yeah, although they say it's like less now, but yeah, that's traditionally 3 points for the home team. So they'd see these teams as kind of equal teams.
Yeah, and I think that, when you look at the records and you look at who these two teams have played, I wonder if that line is accurate. And it's this is there's two really, really good games this week. Two really good games. Miami Philly on Sunday night, and then this game is right up there with it. You have Miami and Philly both at 5-1. And then Lions here at 5-1, Ravens at 4-2. But there's only five and one teams in the league right now, and the Lions are one of them. And so it's going to be interesting to see if they can get over this hurdle and get to 6-1. Because if they can, schedule looks a lot lighter coming off this game. So this is an important game. If you can win here in Baltimore, it'll mean something, a lot.
This isn't worth noting. I did want to look it up, did want to mention it. The Lions have played in Baltimore against the Ravens 3 times in Baltimore's history, 98, 2009, 2017. Probably bad samples. Ravens have won all 3 times. Lions have never won in Baltimore. I did not look up Lions versus Baltimore Colts to see if the Lions have had bad luck in Baltimore in general. I don't know if this really affects anything. Those are 2017, 2009. Those are bad Lions teams that went to
Oh yeah.
Baltimore. 98,
Well,
that's Barry's last year. They were in Baltimore, right? 98 would have been, yeah.
I mean, well, look, these two teams have faced off against this current regime in Campbell's first year as a head coach in Detroit. And so, I think there's some lessons to be learned, like as much as they have a new coordinator, and they actually have a new defensive coordinator since that time as well.
Yeah, the former
It's
Michigan defensive coordinator, Mike McDonald.
Mike McDonald. Yep. And so I want to talk about these two coordinators in a minute, but it is a different team than the Lions faced two and a half years ago or whatever, or 3 years ago, I
Right.
guess it'd be now. But a lot of the principles are still the same philosophically on both sides of the ball because they still have a lot of the same kind of key players. They are what they are. They have an identity. They've stuck with that identity for decades. And it's still the same team. So facing them with the team that they had a couple years ago and it being a tight game, I think it's a good base of information for the coaching staff to build off of. Because you have a much more talented team now that's working with a lot more confidence, and the coaching staff has a lot more confidence. And so I don't think they're going to go into this game necessarily intimidated, while I think a lot of the Lions fans are definitely concerned about the Ravens. I don't think this coaching staff or players are as intimidated as, the public is.
Useless trivia. The first time these two teams played was December 27th, 1998, 2 days after Christmas. Barry rushed for like 2 yards a carry. But who was the Ravens quarterback in that game? I'm asking it because you
Is
could
it?
probably answer this question.
I was going to say Dilfer.
It wasn't Trent Dilfer. Great guess. Do you want a clue? Because now you're probably not going to get it.
No, I won't get it now.
All right. The clue is his brother is now the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens.
Oh, it was Jim Harbaugh?
Yeah, yeah. I remember he played for them.
Yeah, but, for you know, just a year.
It was after, yeah. after when he played for the Colts.
That's funny. So, yeah.
All right. Let's continue talking about the Ravens. That was a non-sequitur trivia question. I was clicking on box scores. All right. This is going to be a Fox game, 1 o'clock. Like you mentioned, this is one of the maybe the second most interesting game on the slate after Sunday Night Football. Fox's number one crew, again, Kevin Burkhardt, Greg Olsen, Aaron Andrews, and Tom Rinaldi. So this is becoming a theme now.
Oh, yeah. And I think it will be a theme as long
they
as
they don't have the hardest, you know, schedule.
Well, but they're going to draw attention. And they're a hot team right now. I mean, like they're nationally, they're still getting tons of attention. They're all over NFL Network. They're all over Good Morning Football. There's websites that are creating YouTube videos, breaking down the play. There's ESPN is talking about them more. And so they're still, I mean, look, even Rich Eisen, you know, led off his show talking about them. And so, Will it taper off? Yeah, I mean, maybe, especially when you get into the weaker opponents. But at the same time, they're going to be an interesting storyline because it's new. And there's a lot of people that don't believe that the Lions are for real. And there's going to be a lot of people like nationally that have been on the Lions bandwagon that are going to want to say, hey, I've been on them. You guys should be on them. I've been telling you should be on them. And they're going to, because people like to be right. Right. And so
right.
I think they'll stay in that kind of public eye. I do think they'll get flexed. They might get flexed for another game or two. We'll see how that works out. They have a couple of options for flex games. And so I don't think they're going away. And especially when you get into like, if they keep winning and their schedule just keeps favoring them and they keep just like adding up wins and the rest of the division isn't good. Like they're going to want to start comparing them even more to, are they the best team in the NFC? Are they, you know, can they compete? Are they going to win the one seed? Cause for the Lions to like come out with like a one seed, which is, I think if you look at the schedule, not out of the realm of possibility, right?
Right.
Because
right.
San Francisco's not schedule isn't easy. Philly's got a lot of, has like
they three have or to four play each really other
tough games. Yeah, they play each other. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that if the Lions do what they're supposed to do, they could be in a really, really good spot. And so I don't think they're going to escape. I don't the national spotlight here, and I think there's going to be a lot of, you know, opportunities where Fox is going to say, let's just keep rolling and keep building on this, you know, Lions wave of energy.
All right. The ref for the game's Brad Rogers, fifth year as an NFL ref, seventh season overall in the NFL.
He throws a lot of flags. 15.3 is what he throws, which is almost a full three flags above the average. Last time the Lions saw him was Week 18 of 2022. So that was the Packers at Packers.
That's a good history.
Lambeau, right?
Although so, they still try to hand the Packers that game.
Yeah, you know, I mean, look, it was a weird kind of game, right? I'm kind of expecting a couple of weird things out of Rodgers here as well. It tends to come with him a little bit. But, man, I'm hoping the flags stay in the pocket. Because these are two tough physical teams and I'd like to see him, you know, be real physical and that a ref allowed to happen.
Yeah. That was the first thing that popped in my head too, when seeing that stat about these three flags over average. It's like, okay. And on top of it, these are going to be two physical teams. They're going to be throwing laundry all over the place. So hopefully that's not what happens. And
right.
maybe the fellas in New York are going to be in their ear about, hey, put those flags away. This is marquee games of the week.
Right. Right. For sure. Yeah. I agree with that.
DVOA rankings. The Lions keep ascending now overall second in DVOA numbers, offensively fourth, the pass, seventh at the run. On defense, they're third overall, fifth against the pass, third against the run. and special teams in the middle of the pack at 19. The Ravens overall are number 6. So this is going to be a heavyweight bout. Offensively, they're 10th, 14th the pass, 4th on the run. Defensively, they're 2nd, so ahead of the Lions. 3rd against the pass, 7th against the run. Special teams also middle of the pack, 15th.
Yeah, so very evenly matched opponents. And when you look at how they match up, like Lions are 4th in offense, Ravens are 2nd in defense. 4th against the pass for 4th passing for Lions, 3rd against the. I mean, like they match up well.
Strength on strength.
It's very much. And it's the only, like the, if you look at DVOA, the only real advantage the Lions have, and by advantage, I mean like, you know, 9 spots, is the Lions' pass defense is better than the Ravens' pass offense. Other than that, it's pretty even. And, you know, with the passing offense or passing defense being the one advantage you have, it's not a huge thing that you can do to like win the game. It's going to help you to win the game, but it's not going to be like a turning point type of thing. So the fact that the Lions passing defense is playing so well, though, I think does set up the fact that you can approach this game in a similar fashion that you did Tampa, which is load up to stop the run and force the ball into Lamar's hands and force him to try and beat you through the air. Now, whereas Baker, you wanted to keep in the pocket and you didn't want to let him escape. With Lamar, you almost want to flush him a little bit. At the same time, you have to keep that contain going. So it's kind of like a mixed bag because Lamar's actually better in the pocket than he is throwing out of the pocket this year. It's a little bit different than in the past. Lamar has always been really good against the blitz. This year, he's really bad against the blitz. So like there's some different nuances that you can do to attack, but you know, it's going to be from a statistical standpoint, even the advanced metrics, like it says these two teams are very evenly matched and each team has a slight advantage in one area or another.
All right, they made a bunch of offseason additions. You know, they signed Jackson to the big extension last season. Mm-hmm. But they tried to give him a couple of more weapons. Wide receivers, yep. Odell Beckham Jr., wide receiver Nelson Aguilar. And then on the other side of the ball, edge rusher to Jadeveon Clowney, cornerbacks Rock Ya-Sin and Trayvon Mullen. Mullen's on IR, so we're not going to see him on Sunday. From past season, they lost guard Ben Powers, cornerback Marcus Peters, edge rusher Justin Houston, defensive end Calais Campbell. In the draft, they picked up wide receiver Zay Flowers, who also finds himself in the starting lineup. Third round, they took linebacker Trenton Simpson, fourth rounder edge Tavius Robinson, fifth rounder Q Blue Kelly, no longer with the Ravens already, and now he's in Seattle. Sixth rounder, they took offensive tackle Mele Sala, Ave Lau Lau. We're probably not going to see him. Thank God I murdered his name. In the seventh round, they took guard Andrew Voorhees. No relation to Jason, probably.
Well, you never know. But Andrew is an NFI. He was the center, played center guard for USC, tore his ACL late in the year. So he's still recovering from that. So you probably we won't see him. They look, 3 brand new receivers, right? They got, you know, they had previously drafted Rashad Bateman in the first round, but Bateman hasn't really worked out. And so they went out and got 3 new starters to try and give Jackson some ammunition. And it's a mixed bag. Odell's 31 and kind of looking like a 31-year-old. He's only averaging a couple, like 2 catches, I think 2.2 catches a game or something like that. Mm-hmm. Aguilar is Aguilar, who will forever be a meme for not being able to catch the ball. Right. But Zay Flowers is terrific. And we'll get into the receiver group a little bit more. But yeah, Zay Flowers, their first pick. He's been awesome. And he will be. He'll be, he's, you know, a little gadget guy, a little small, but he can play outside. He can play in the slot. He can do a lot of variety of different things. And it was a very solid first pick from the Ravens. And, you know, the Ravens have a roster that I think the Lions, and they have a strategy to the offseason that I think the Lions would like to have, which is you draft a handful of players and maybe one of them ends up starting. And the other ones are all in reserve roles and they compete for starting opportunities. And it's all the Lions. The Lions are almost there. You know what I mean? Like they're almost there. And you know, they probably would have only had, you know, I don't even know if they necessarily had a starter pegged other than maybe Sam Laporta, but you know, Branch emerges and wins the job. And then, you know, Gibbs is your 1A, you know, with running backs, you have co-starters as it is, but yeah, Lions depth is to a point where, man, they are close to being able to just like have that core solidified and just be able to, you know, draft for depth. And that's a great spot to be in. And I think the Ravens are kind of like a blueprint for that, a long longevity, of success, a perennial playoff team, And a team that always has a chance to make a run at it.
Now that the Patriots are easing their way, you know, like an old man easing his way into a bath, like they're no longer the premier team in the league. You got to look at Baltimore is now being surfaced at the top. It's like this is, although Kansas City, but because they have Mahomes, they're winning sure. A couple Super Bowls. But like the program that is unchanging, is solid from year to year. That's the Ravens. And that would be great if the Lions could get themselves in that position. Mentioned already 4-2, first place in the AFC North. Week one, they defeated Houston 25-9. That was CJ Stroud's first game. Week two, they defeated Cincinnati 27-24. Cincinnati had no Joe Burrow. Week three, they lost to Indianapolis and Gardner Minshew. Week four, they defeated Cleveland 28-3. Cleveland rolled Dorian Thompson-Robinson out there. Week five, rookie. They lost to Pittsburgh. Yeah, rookie. Losing Kenny Pickett. Week six, they defeat Tennessee with Ryan Tannehill injured and Malik Willis in relief in his terrible showing in that game. Now, I didn't know that off the top of my head. Eric gave me this information. This is on my notes page here. And I know what Eric's going to bring up. They didn't look, they've played no quarterbacks, but then, you know, on Baltimore Ravens breakdown, if you listen to them, you know, Joe Schlitt and Eric Kania, and they're talking about, you know, like, well, they beat Mahomes, but didn't have Kelsey. They didn't have Chris Jones. And then they lost to Geno Smith. And then they beat Desmond Ridder and they beat Bryce Young and they beat Baker Mayfield. And they beat Jordan Love. Who have they beat? They haven't beaten
anybody. No, certainly you could make that argument. I think it's worth noting that they've faced two rookies. Both of those rookies were in their first starts, and then they've had to face the backup quarterback of the other team's backup quarterback three times. So the right. Only time they've played a team's starting quarterback is Pittsburgh, and they lost 17-10. So,
but that's the rivalry game in the NFL, though. Yeah. If you can consider any rivalry games out there, that's the one, Pittsburgh Baltimore.
And I think when I look at that's when I look at the fact that they've only played one starting quarterback in the NFL. Over their four and two record, it makes me just question the legitimacy of some of their wins. And then when you look at the fact that their last two games were not terrific, I wonder if they are vulnerable. Is what it is. Now look, this is a legitimate team. They have talent up and down the roster, and good teams with lots of talent find ways to win. But the last two games have been a bit of a struggle for them. And one of those last two, they lost to the Raiders in an ugly game against the Steelers. And then they almost blew the Titans game overseas. So they're good, and their numbers say like they're elite. And I don't think this is an elite team. This is a good to great team. And good to great teams can win against anybody. And this is a Ravens team that can win against anybody for sure. At the same time, their numbers say they're one of the best teams in the NFL. And I don't know if they are. Are they a top 10 team? Yes, that's a good to great team. Are they a top 5 team? I don't think they're a top 5 team.
You know, when I came up with the fake Baltimore Ravens podcast, I shouldn't have switched our names. I should have with Derek Schlitt and Jerry Kenya. That
probably would have been. I liked what you better. Did. What you did. It was good.
All right, let's go down the Baltimore Ravens depth chart.
Well, before we get to that, you want to talk just coordinators real fast.
Yeah, go ahead.
So Todd Monken is
the offensive coordinator.
Yep, got his start at Grand Valley State back in 1989. Right, so
not a bad place to start.
Right, so ends up cracking into the league like 2007. He's an offensive coordinator by the 2000 teens, like 14 or something like that. He's an offensive coordinator for Tampa. He's an offensive coordinator for Cleveland. Then he's one and done in Cleveland, and he goes to Georgia, University of Georgia. Right. And he's their offensive coordinator for 3 years, wins two national championships as their offensive coordinator. So he parlays that to jump back into the league. Now,
John Harbaugh loves bringing in college coordinators.
He does. Now, the old system used a lot of zone read, right? And you got to remember, Greg Roman was their former Stanford offensive coordinator, former San Francisco 49ers offensive coordinator, right? Like, right. And he did all of those under John's brother, Jim, right? So Greg followed John around.
They're brothers? Oh, wait, I already mentioned
that. I know. The Harbaughs tend to trade coordinators and staff members all the time.
And signs. Do they trade signs too?
Who knows? I don't know. But I mean, we'll see. But they, with Roman, they tried to apply the same style that he had used in San Francisco when Kaepernick was their quarterback. So a lot of zone reads, a lot of verticals, and it wasn't working the way that John Harbaugh wanted it to work. And so they parted ways and they brought in Monken. So Monken comes from an air raid background. When he was at Oklahoma State, he was with he got a lot of air raid system. That's where his base came from. But when he's been in the NFL, he tries to run a more balanced attack. And that was his game plan. That's what we talked about in the preseason. He came in, he said, he wants to be balanced on run pass. Harbaugh wants him to be balanced on run pass. Problem is that Harbaugh also wants to run the ball. That is a ingrained Harbaugh trait, right?
He only wants to run the ball.
Every Harbaugh wants to run the ball. Yes. And so what ends up happening is that Monken's kind of defaults to that, and the Ravens have run the ball more than anyone else in the entire NFL. For example, they have, I think, 203 rushing attempts. That's like 20 more than the Lions have. So they run the ball a lot. And then what you find is when he gets into situations that are tough for him, he leans on it even more, and he ends up running like some of the things that Roman used to run, like RPOs and zone reads when he gets like in trouble or he gets like a stagnant offense. And so he almost like defaults back to what the system was before he was there. And again, I think that's because that's the John Harbaugh influence. He's going back to deploy what Harbaugh thinks this team is and what Harbaugh wants this team to be. And so you see a lot of, you see fewer designed runs than with Roman, but they still lean on it when they feel like they need to. They'll use it in the red zone effectively, but their red zone scoring has been down of late. That's been part of their struggles the last couple of games. But those zone reads are there, just not as frequent. They try and keep Lamar in the pocket as much as possible. He's been good in the pocket. And then, like I said, if you can get him off platform a little bit, he struggles a little bit more because he's not as quick to tuck and run as he used to be. He's moving out of the pocket on the run, still trying to make the throw, and he's not as accurate in those situations. So a lot of the same that we've known of these Ravens for a while. At the same time, there are some subtle differences that do make the offense I almost want to say less effective because it's not as dynamic. They're more efficient. They're more like an NFL offense than they were under Roman. At the same time, they're still running into problems. They're still kind of working out the kinks here. And I think part of that is just because, again, it's like a new system. They're trying to get comfortable. And there's hiccups that come with that when you have a new coordinator. On defense, do you want to talk about defense coordinator when we get to defense?
Go ahead. Yeah, we're on it because we might forget when we get over.
All right. So McDonald got his NFL shot with the Ravens back in the mid-2010s. Worked his way through multiple positions, started his quality control, coached defensive backs, coached linebackers, and then he passed him off to Michigan, where he was the defensive coordinator for Michigan for 1 year. It just so happened that was the year that Aiden Hutchinson was a senior. And so he was the one that said, let's stand Hutchinson up and unlock his potential a little bit more. He was the one that took David Ajabo and turned him into, you know, the sensational athlete that got drafted on day two, even though he had torn his ACL. Like, what he did with that defense, I mean, he got Dax Hill drafted in the first round. Like, he did a lot of really important things with that defense to make them successful. That following offseason, John Harbaugh and Wink Martindale, who's been around for a long time, they part ways. And so John goes back and says, let me take my loaner back and let's bring McDonald back to Baltimore. And he basically just put in the exact same defense that he was using at Michigan. They run like this 4-2-5. They like to use a traditional nickel, but they also will go big in that nickel where they'll drop safeties into that spot, kind of like a CJ Gardner-Johnson type of guy. That's what they use Kyle Hamilton for. And McDonald is a guy who he learned under Wink, right? He learned under Wink Martindale. So he's still kind of influenced by him, but he has some subtle differences that he, you know, got from his Michigan time when he was able to call plays on his own that he's incorporated. And so you're seeing things that are a little bit different. They don't blitz as much, but they still find ways to get pressure. But it's a similar offense to what you saw at Michigan. And when, again, you see those Wink Martindale influences, though, still coming back. You see them blitzing. It's just not as frequently. And so, again, different tweaks to this defense, but a lot of those base identities that have been with this team, you know, for a decade or more. So interesting that they've changed the coordinators out, yet they're still similar in a lot of the same ways.
All right, now we'll dig into the team. We'll start with the offense. It all starts with the quarterback, Lamar Jackson. Eric Sardi mentioned him a couple of times. We probably don't need to talk too much about him. 2019 NFL MVP. Leads the Ravens. He's throwing 70% completion percentage. He's thrown three picks, though, through six games. Leads the team in rushing. You know, not much you can say that everybody doesn't already know about Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, when he's going to get loose, like that happens. That's part of their plan. Like I said, it happens more in the red zone by design. He will, if he in between the 20s, if he does run, it's usually because of a broken play as opposed to a design. And but they will use designs when they get in the red zone, when things get tight, because it's hard to cover, right? And so they usually try and keep him in the pocket where his accuracy has been up, but there is still a learning curve that's happening with him and all of his brand new receivers.
All right. In the running back group, Gus Edwards is the starter. Justice Hill is his backup. You know, it's too bad. J.K. Dobbins went on injured reserve earlier this year.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of talent. No, we've never really seen him play. You know, we've seen some nice games out of him, but he just keeps getting hurt every year.
Yeah.
Know, luckily, the Lions won't have to face him, you know, where Gus isn't really a dangerous back.
Yeah, it's like a 60-40 split with 60 going to Gus Edwards. He's more of the power, which is what they want to run. Justice Hill is more of the, you know, the lightning to Edwards' thunder. But they'll use Hill in some pretty snaps. They'll use Hill as their speed option. They do a lot of outside zone stuff with him. They'll do trick, like a little bit of trick plays with him as well, like quick end arounds and stuff like that. So it's not though, it's definitely not as lethal as what they were hoping to have if they had a healthy J.K. Dobbins.
Wide receiver group for the Ravens, Zay Flowers, the rookie, Odell Beckham Jr., Rashad Bateman. Those are the first three. Nelson Aguilar, Devin Duvernay on the bench.
And so, like, Bateman's a first rounder. Duvernay's a third rounder from a couple years back. And they don't see the field as often as, you know, Flowers, Beckham, and Aguilar. Beckham and Bateman are about the same. They see about half the snaps, maybe a little bit less for both of them. Aguilar sees maybe a little bit more than half, but Zay Flowers is on the field a ton. Duvernay just a little bit. So they like to spread it around, but really the Flowers is the guy that you have to be most worried about. Bateman is inconsistent. He has been inconsistent. Lots of talent. He doesn't seem to ever find his way into the right spot that Lamar is looking for. Zay Flowers is always in the right spot. Beckham is still the guy that you know, where he can, you know, make some impressive catches. But like I said, he only makes like two a game. So he still flashes those things, but he's just not, he's not this dynamic threat that he used to be. Aguilar is what he has always been as well. He can be a really nice slot option, and at times he can look highly efficient. And then other times you'll see the ball just hit him in the hands and then hit the turf. So interesting wide receiver group. On paper, they look really, really good. They haven't been super efficient, but the talent is definitely there.
Definitely not in the top two, though, of receiving corps the Lions have faced this year. That would go to Seattle and last week of the Buccaneers. Those were probably the two best receiving corps they've faced so far. Tight end is Mark Andrews, backups Isaiah Likely, Charlie Kohler. Andrews used to be Lamar's number one target. He's kind of moved over to Zay Flowers' world, but Andrews is the guy.
Yeah, and he's a guy they're going to focus. The Lions are going to focus on a lot because he's a really good tight end. Likely had a really good year last year. He's been struggling this year. Same thing with Kohler. Both those guys were both rookies last year. They're in kind of having some sophomore slumps, but Andrews is the guy really that you have to account for. It'd be interesting to see if they try and match Brian Branch up over on to Andrews, or if they try and match Brian Branch up on the Zay Flowers. Like Detroit, their top two guys are guys that can, you know, work the middle of the field and you know, show some creativity from from Zay Flowers. But Andrews is definitely a guy that you have to account for.
Baltimore is a team that utilizes a fullback from time to time. Patrick Ricard is that fullback. He hasn't ran the ball once this season, although he does have two receptions.
Yeah, he's on the field about a third of the time, or maybe a quarter of the time.
He's a relic. It's one of the last living fossils that you'll see on the field. The fullback.
Yep.
Traditional fullback.
Yep.
All right. Offensive line, left to right. Ronnie Stanley, John Simpson, Tyler Linderbaum, Kevin Zeitler, and Morgan Moses.
The tight ends, or I'm sorry, the tackles are good. Stanley's really good. Moses is not quite, but he's played well. If he matches up against Aiden, it's potentially problematic for them. I don't think he matches up well with Aiden, but if the Lions use the same approach they used last week with Tampa, you're going to have Aiden against Stanley, which is, you know, where Hutchinson could be quieted down by Stanley, I think, a little bit more.
Similarly, like to Tristan Wirfs last week.
Yeah, Wirfs was fantastic left tackle. Simpson on the inside at left guard is probably the weak link. Lindenbaum is terrific, first round pick a year ago, and Zeitler is a really good guard as well.
Veteran guard.
Yep, he's been around for a while. But if you're going to attack, you're probably going to attack John Simpson, and that's where you look for Aleem. That's where you're going to try and get Aleem over him as much as you can. And Aleem has a chance to kind of wreck some things in that way. My guess is, again, I could be it just makes sense that they're going to try and play the contain game. And if they play the contain game, you have to rush up the middle. You have to get pressure up the middle in order to disrupt Lamar. And that means Aleem really has to win his battles against this interior offensive line.
Do you have Aleem's PFF score from last week in front of you?
I don't, but I can look it up if you want real fast.
Go ahead.
No, he did okay last week. He's still in the top five, I think, amongst defensive tackles. Or he was going into the week, and then last week, 71-1. So that's up there. I mean, look, his last four games, 80.8, 83, 92.1, 71.1. So
yeah, much better than he was at the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm. Bad game against Seattle, good game against Kansas City. But the last four, he's been on top of things.
All right. Baltimore defense, Mike McDonald's defense on the front line, Justin Matabukwe, Michael Pierce, Broderick Washington, Edge, Jadeveon Clowney.
So like I said earlier, they kind of run like a 4-2-5. And so that means you're going to get a rotation of those interior guys. Matabukwe, Pierce, and Washington will be there when they want to go to their traditional 4-3, which they will do if the Lions only put two receivers on the field. But if they, with the Lions offense and having Sam Laporta as a weapon, my guess is they're going to be spending a lot of their base as like a two down lineman. You saw a little bit more. If you watched the Titans game last week, cause they were on, you know, early in the morning. So if you got up and you watched that game, with Titans versus Ravens, you probably saw them using more three man looks. That's because of Derrick Henry. Like, they were worried about Henry's ability to run, so they were playing a little bit bigger up front. So you saw more traditional 3-4 looks, but against the Lions, it's going to be more two down guys so that they can get an extra defensive back on the field because the Lions have more pass catching weapons. So I expect Matabukwe and Pierce to be their primary guys. Washington will be the guy who supplements. It would usually be Brent Urban as the backup, but he's injured. He got in a little bit of a limited practice this week with just one after missing practice earlier in the week. So they then have to turn to Travis Jones if they need a fourth guy. And so that you got that injury with depth plus a different style of opponent, and the Ravens do adapt their defense. So I'm guessing it's going to be mostly Matabukwe and Pierce.
Linebacking crew, they got a ton of linebackers. Odafe Owe, Roquan Smith, who's the star in the middle, Patrick Queen, another solid linebacker. They also got Kyle Van Noy and the rookie Trenton Simpson. They got they have some known guys to Lions fans. Kyle Van
Noy. The big one is Clowney, right? They got Clowney, who we mentioned they picked up before. So Clowney and Owe are two really good pass rushers. Van Noy has been starting with Owe injured, but Owe looks like he's going to be coming back. So that'll probably put Van Noy back on the bench. And then, so they're going to have a nice trio of outside edge guys. Roquan Smith is one of the best in the NFL. We've seen him a ton when he was with the Bears. He's done even better in Baltimore than he did with the Bears. Queen is solid. Simpson is just getting his feet wet. Like, I don't think Simpson was a great player at Clemson, but he is not, I don't think he's ready for the NFL, and they're trying to put him inside of kind of like the Mike and it's, or the, like that in that Roquan Smith role. And it's a struggle for him right now. It's going to take him a little bit of time. Malik Harrison is also pretty good. They use him as an off ball guy as well. And so, yeah, they do have a lot of linebacking depth. Makes me think all the more that they're going to keep those four guys on the field as much as they can. And so you're going to have four linebackers. And like I said, those two down linemen, leaving you with, you know, five defensive backs.
All right. Speaking of those five defensive backs, Brandon Stevens, Marlon Humphrey, and Ronald Darby is questionable. They also have Rock Ya-Sin. That's a group of corners right there.
Yeah, those are your outsides, right? And so Stevens and Humphrey are your starters. Humphrey is a good player, but he's had a bit of an up and down season so far. Stevens, I think, is actually kind of average. Rock Ya-Sin has played well as like an injury replacement. Darby's been okay. Darby missed today's practice with an illness, so that's something to keep an eye on. Those are your outside guys. On the inside at nickel, they have Arthur Maulet. He's decent. I don't think he's going to be, if they match him up on Amon-Ra, it's a big advantage, I think, for Amon-Ra. But they will also, the way that they use their safeties is they will also use Kyle Hamilton in the nickel spot as well. But with the depth of their safety group and injuries at safety, I have a feeling it's going to be a lot of Maulet facing off against St. Brown. And that could be an area where the Lions, have an advantage.
Mentioned the safeties, Kyle Hamilton, Marcus Williams, a decent pair there. Darryl Worley went to IR. Geno Stone is the other safety on the roster.
And Williams got hurt late in the last week's game, has not practiced this week, probably going to be injured, which means they're going to have Kyle Hamilton and Geno Stone, and then end of list. They have some safeties on the practice squad that they may promote. Last week, when Kyle Hamilton was ejected and then Marcus Williams got hurt, they had Geno Stone and they had to use Rock Ya-Sin as a safety. And so I don't think Ya-Sin is a guy that they want back there, but he's like kind of an emergency safety. With Hamilton and Geno, the only two safeties, I do think that limits the ability for them to drop Hamilton into the nickel and play two safeties behind him, because you're not going to want to, put a guy who's maybe not as skilled back at safety, especially when you have a guy like J-Mo who can stretch those safeties. And so Hamilton may end up having to stay back a little bit more. And if that's the case, like I said, it opens things up for the Lions' top pass catchers in Sam LaPorta and Amon-Ra.
All right. That's enough of the Ravens defense talk. Special teams. Place kicker, we know this guy real well. Justin Tucker set the NFL record against the Lions last time they went out 66-yard field goal to win it. The heartbreaker, Dan Campbell's first season, said, "Coach, I don't have to talk about him. He might be the best all time."
Sure. Yep, punter, I don't want
to
talk.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about it. Everybody knows he's the best. Punters, Jordan Stout, in his second year in the league, pretty run of the mill, although he puts about 50% of his punts inside the 20-yard line.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. He's had some good games this year, but he's kind of your run of the mill.
Return man, Devin Duvernay, he returns both punts and kicks.
Better punt returner than kick returner. So you got to keep an eye on that with Jack Fox and see if he angles away from him, see if he tries to put a couple more in the corner like he did last week. It's you don't want to let Duvernay get loose. He had a 70-yarder last week. Didn't score. He got tackled by the kicker, but he had a 70-yard return last week in against the Titans. He he's not doing a lot as a receiver, so he is contributing on special teams though.
Two kickoff returns for touchdown in his career, averaging 15 yards per punt return on the season. That's pretty good return yard average.
Mm-hmm.
Long snapper for the Ravens is Tyler Otts. So we've gone basically through their roster there. This is a tough one. I don't know who you're going to be picking.
I think so I think you won again last week because you had a lower score.
That was lower score.
So you will get the option to go again first, but give you a second or two here to think about it, because I do want to point out that while the Ravens have not faced this litany of quarterbacks that we talked about, when we started first started breaking the Ravens down, they are sack machines right now. They have 24 on the season, which is the most in the NFL. And so maybe one or two of those you can mark against the quarterback for holding on to the ball too long, especially those young rookies, but they're still getting to the quarterback. They're getting pressures, they're getting sacks, and that's something to be conscious of. At the same time, the Lions have only allowed 10 sacks on the season, and that's fifth best in the NFL. So they haven't faced an offensive line as good as the Lions yet either. I really think this is where things are going to be kind of sorted, right? Can the offensive line hold up? If they can, then it's going to give Goff a chance to throw the ball around, and if he has time, we've seen him be pretty terrific. If he doesn't have time, then it's going to be a long afternoon and it's going to be a much, much closer game. So offensive line is going to be a pretty key component in determining this game.
See, I want to zag here because, they're not favored. A lot of people are saying that, this is the one they're probably going to lose. They're going to, but it's a tough place to play. Baltimore's good. If they're going to lose, this is probably it. But part of me wants to say, they're going to go against type and they're going to win this game. They're going to blow some game that's going to blow our minds. Like, why did they blow this one? I'm going to go with them to win. Lions 21, Baltimore 17.
Ooh, all right. Now, I am also picking the Lions to win this game. I'm not.
Era homers here.
I thought you, for sure you might go against them.
No, because it's too obvious. And they probably, this one's too obvious this week. All signs point the Lions aren't winning this week. That's why I think, it's going to go the other way.
Jeez. I think it's going to be tight, and I think it's going to be a little, but not much tighter than what you have. I wanted to keep the score low, but I'm having a hard time keeping the score low. I don't know. I'm back and forth on the score a lot. I do think the Lions win this one. I think they've got at least two touchdowns in them and probably three field goals is a lot, but I kind of am getting that impression that they can, that it's going to be three field goals. And I'm going to go with a 23-20 score. So slightly above you on both the scores, but still at that 43. So I think that's right up, if I'm not mistaken, that's pretty close to where the over-under is. I don't remember if the over-under was 42 or 44, but it's right in that range. I don't know. I think they can score three touchdowns. I just don't know. I think
it's a lot of touchdowns. Maybe on defense.
I mean, the Ravens don't give up a lot of touchdowns. Like, they just don't. I got a weird feeling like they're going to get some movement. Okay. The most fascinating thing to me about this whole, Baltimore team, and this is really, I think, what's going to, for the people who turn off the podcast when we get to the, to the picks here. They're gonna miss this part, unfortunately. And this is actually one of my favorite parts. When you look at the Ravens offense in yards per game or yards per play, they average like around the you know, a little bit in the, I think they're like top in the top half of the league. Let's just put it that way. But when you break it down per quarter, it's pretty startling what you see. In the first quarter, the Ravens have an average of 5.1 yards per play, which is seventh in the NFL. In quarter two, their yards per play drops to 4.8. In quarter three, it drops to 4.3. And in quarter four, it drops to 3.2. They start out hot, and then they just taper off. And they just taper. You see the same thing with their point totals. 6.8 down to 5.8 down to 4.8. Down, like, it just tapers off as the game goes on. And for the Lions, you don't see that as much, right? You see the Lions offense being a little bit more successful. You see they have those rough third quarters, but their fourth quarter points scored are high. And so, like, they score 4.3 points in the fourth quarter. That's like sixth best in the NFL. So my gut is it's going to be a tight one early with the Ravens probably taking the lead. And it's going to get close, but then the Lions will have that kind of subdued third quarter. And then it's that fourth quarter comeback where it's like all of a sudden, boom, that's where they start to come alive. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they like went into the half, like, you know, 14-9 or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, where the Lions can only muster up field goals and then they score 14 points in the last, you know, quarter or something like that, you know, because the Ravens, and if you saw the Titans game, if you saw the Pittsburgh game, you could see it. That there's a that's why I went and looked those stats up. Is you see them come out and look great, and then it just goes downhill. Like, they just go downhill from the first couple of drives, and you can outlast them. I think the Lions are a team that's built to play full 60 minutes, and for a team like the Lions who can put points up on the board late, and a team like the Ravens that come off the table, there's an opportunity for a comeback win in this one.
All right. To the reviews. Apple Podcasts, we got a boost of 3 written reviews.
Oh, nice.
One from Country Gravy, one from Tio Chino, and then a beautiful poem from D3 Blue and Silver. And I won't do it. I would read it, but I wouldn't do it justice. Plus, it's like, it's about us, you know, so it's like, you know, I'm going to read a poem about myself. And you know, it's probably not the right thing to do, but it is really great. Like, it's very appreciated, the poem. So all 3 5-star reviews, all great. We got a bump in number of 5-stars or number of votes or whatever in Spotify as well, so that's great. Thank you. Please, you know, keep them coming in. You know, thanks for everybody for listening. What are your thoughts on Saturday's game, Eric, for our 2 minutes of Michigan State talk?
Well, look,
not going to be much of a game this year.
Is Michigan State going to play? Like, because they had said
said they might not play because, you know, the Fighting Harbaughs, they've been cheating recently, and I mean, right. I haven't dug too far into what they're being accused of this time. I'm sure it's really not. On the surfaces, they're being investigated for scouting the other teams. I'm guessing what they're doing is illegal, but doesn't really seem super illegal. But maybe there's more to the story.
It's so okay. So I haven't really dug into it as much as well. But on the surface, basically you're not allowed to send scouts in person to watch college games, which is something
bizarre.
I had no idea.
every game, you know, at every future opponent's game,
right? I like, let me put it this way: the Lions have dedicated spots for their future opponents coming to scout their games. Like, right. I walk past them, like, I know, I'm like, oh, look, there's the Ravens scout that I'm walking past when I'm at Ford Field a couple right. weeks ago. Like I didn't even realize it was a thing. So I don't know, whatever. Apparently Baylor got caught doing it a couple years ago. And the coach that did it, was suspended for half a game. And so I don't think the penalty is very large.
And he's used to being suspended for games or halves of games.
But it's the coach that did it. So it's not like Harbaugh's. Okay. It's not like Harbaugh's scouting.
No trouble.
Yeah, like I don't think this is going to be as big of a thing as it's being made out to be. What I'm getting at based on the Baylor situation. Regardless, on the field, I'm curious because they had the incident in the tunnel last year, and then the papers aren't even playing the game this year because like they're not into it. And so, like, I just wonder if the whole thing is going to be subdued. At the same time, it's at night. You can now serve alcohol.
Yeah,
and
wow.
So I do wonder if there's going
three
to be
long beer lines at Spartan Stadium now. So yes, they are still serving alcohol. I'm sure they'll be serving alcohol before the game too, as
normal. Oh yeah, you know, how many college kids are going to be just drinking the whole day in preparation? Like
that's what college kids do, whether a game or not. did go to college at one.
That is accurate. But I guess what I'm getting at is it could be weird. Like it could be like a complete disaster where like there's problems in the stands and because that's the opposite. That's the other thing is at the same time, it could be the complete opposite where nothing happens because the game maybe isn't close. And then like nobody really like buys in at all. I don't know.
There is a lot more going into this game. You mentioned the tunnel incident, which nobody's talking about because now this other thing's popped up with Michigan, but nobody's going back to the old tunnel thing. And I guess it's also because Mel's been fired. This team's just like a skeleton of a team, you know, like are even half, you know, these guys are going to play in this game or even half of them going to be around the Michigan State side. You know, I'm speaking more of the quote unquote Michigan State expert in this chat, but like, are half of these guys even be around next season to play them again?
Right.
I remember the Jabril Peppers, that era Michigan team was it early. I mean, I think it was D'Antonio Harbaugh at that time, and Michigan was really good and State wasn't. And it wasn't much of a game except for State kind of made it close late. It was 32-23. And I think it was like 30-23, but then State went for, but that game was like, it was an afternoon game, really subdued. You know, nobody was, you know, losing their minds, although I wasn't sitting near the student section. But even then, like student section, there's only a few Michigan fans. And, you know, if you're in that situation, like you're probably not going to act up too much because you know you're not going to be in a good situation if you start fighting everybody. You know, like, so, you know, I could see it being a more of a game like that, but with a score that's, you know, not nearly as close.
The only thing
that State has going for them is if they like punch them in the mouth in the first quarter, take some sort of lead, you know, like Michigan's been susceptible to that, right? And Michigan State's going to have some emotion on their side, and then like just do whatever they can to hold on to their life to keep it close, you know, in the second half.
I didn't look. The Lions have kept me busy, and so I have not been.
You don't pay attention as close.
Not as I used to. I used to be in front of the TV for every game. Absolutely, it's a lot harder now with the Lions being successful and the kids and everything. But like, I didn't turn the Michigan game on until the second quarter, and they were down. They were down 7-0 to Indiana, and then I left it on in the background, and they rattled 52 points off after that. And so, you know, I guess I'll just have to make sure I turn the TV on ahead of time, since, you know, in case I'm the luck factor in this, you know, I just want to make sure that I get that TV on just in case. You know, maybe last week was Michigan's wake up call. Like, you can't just take them lightly. You know, I don't know.
Like, well, but they've had that all year, though, too. It's like, but you're right. Sure. At one point, they're going to snap out of it. But they've had this like all season where they've started slow in every game, and they're turning the ball over and stuff. Well, and yeah, they might snap by the great opponent to snap out of it against. But at the same time, maybe they do the same old stuff.
They returned a lot of guys, and there's a lot of NFL talent on the Michigan Wolverines roster. And so I wonder if they have gotten a little bit lackadaisical. Cause like I said, I'm not watching every single snap as often, but I am watching, I'm still watching the majority of the game. I'm just not, in front of the TV hunkered down like I used to be. Now I'm watching enough that I know who these players are, cause they've been on the roster for a while. When I watch more intently, I do think they're an awfully talented team. I think the fact that they're so experienced, I think, is really what makes them contenders for the championship. At the same time, I want, when you have opponents that are light at the beginning of the season, do you get complacent? And maybe was that a factor in them having those lulls? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I'm not going to bet on the game or anything like that. I think that's an unwise thing. Because it's a rivalry game, right? Like, should they win? I think, what's the spread? Like,
an insane, 19 it's like, and a half. Or
I think it's bigger.
Bigger than that. Let me check.
But at the same time, like, I don't think you want to, even though they could win by that spread because they've been beating everybody by like 20 points. You just can't bet against that with State. They're like, State finds ways to win when, like you said, when maybe they shouldn't. And so,
they've pulled off a couple miracles in the series. Yeah,
for sure.
24 and a half. It's current on FanDuel.
But again, like, State, it just seems like the wind has been taken out of this game. And
I think it's three things are doing it. That's what and maybe this is just for me and you. Maybe there's people that said, like, what are these two idiots talking about? But to me, like, when I talk to people now, everybody wants to talk about how great the Lions are.
Right? Yes.
And maybe not how great the Lions are. Maybe not saying it like that. It's like, can you believe what's going on, through these first six games? And that's what the whole – and these are football fans. And mostly, as you and I both know, most people – listening probably live in the same area we do. Whereas, where I'm having conversations with, just tons of Michigan fans is what it turns out to be, like I'm on my side and everybody else is a Michigan fan. And then we would, we normally have conversation about Michigan State. So I think there's a three prong, and I got to get back to my point here. People are talking about the Lions. They're all sucked into the Lions. Michigan's going to win their third straight, win their third straight Big Ten championship. They're kind of the same team they've been the last 2 years. Yeah. And I think everybody's kind of bored with it, the idea, because in the back of their mind, like, we do talk about how Michigan's title contenders, but are people already thinking in the back of their mind, like, they aren't beating Georgia. They aren't beating whoever they're going to face in the championship game or in the semifinals. They might have that feeling. And Michigan State, their fans, including me, of course, is sitting there going, and this goes back a long way. Like, I remember what the Spartans were like when Bobby Williams got fired. That's the ship's just trying to sail out to the end. You're just watching the water go down the drain. Right. And that's what's happening with the season. There's nothing to get excited about,
Yeah.
As the season's coming to an end. So you have like the two college teams, one is in the middle of this disaster that they've just got to sit and wait out. The other one's in kind of like, well, we know what's going to happen, except for two games, and really it might only be one. So, like, who really cares? And it's like, well, here are these Lions. They're taking over everything. And so that Michigan State game kind of really loses its luster.
I do think you're on – yes, I think Tucker getting fired has taken a lot of the wind out of it.
Right, yeah. Because what's Michigan State playing besides pride? But at the same time, like – they're trying to even find an identity to make it through. Right. And all the guys are kind of thinking like, well, I got to do something to stay here. I got to do something to show other coaches somewhere else that I belong there. And
it's a tough spot. It's a tough spot to be in, but I do absolutely agree that the Lions are taking away from them because
it takes away from this game.
I have people for whatever reason, and I don't know, maybe this is just me being naive because of the bubble that I live in, but my neighborhood, the people that I talk to in my neighborhood, most of them are like casual football fans and not diehard football fans. Right. I only find a couple of them, and it's interesting to me. So I don't often, like, people will talk to me
like, about, why aren't you as nerdy as I am?
Right. Yeah. Like, why don't you know the depth of
exactly
the team?
What
the
I know.
Exactly. Like, I don't know. Okay. Whatever. But like, I have a lot of people who will like say things like they know what I do. So they'll say, oh, like, how are they doing and stuff like that. But like, now I'm getting even like more casual fans saying, normally I just watch the game, and now I'm so interested in the team that I'm like looking up articles and I'm reading these, and I'm like, well, thanks
I
for
know
keeping me,
guy em- is.
Thanks for keeping me employed. And, but like, and so I do think that like that takes away, because if you only have so much time, and this,
which
and the Lions
does,
are the interesting, yeah. And the Lions are the interesting storyline. Like, that's where a lot of the focus is. Like, my kid's school last year, and the year prior, a couple of years prior, they did like Michigan State stuff this week. They didn't do it this year. They didn't do any Michigan State stuff this year. They just have been,
it's because
like,
of what Mel was doing on the phone.
Maybe. I mean, maybe
promote that type of behavior in schools.
But like the talk has been, you know, at least in my little world, it has been lots of Lions stuff, and so.
But like you said, we live in our own two little silos.
Oh, yeah,
maybe things
sure.
are different out there. And I'm sure your friends over in the UK might be listening to this going like, what are they even talking about? There's another game. There's this other game that they're playing this weekend.
Well, the nice thing is like, I feel like if you're a football fan, like most football fans, they've expanded their you know, they have a really
football
good, a vast knowledge of football, right? Like, so I don't think they're you know, naive to it
games,
or anything.
Betting on the teams.
Maybe that's where it's going. Maybe that's where it's headed.
Yeah, maybe that is where it's all going. Yeah. All right. I think we've gone on about that enough. It's going to be a big Michigan win, and I'm going to be not as depressed as, you know, as it could be in one of those scenarios, because we could see it coming a mile away right now.
Look at it
and
this
I
way.
I will be ecstatic if they end up winning.
look at it this way. It's a late game on a Saturday and then an early game for the Lions on Sunday.
Yeah,
so there's
yeah,
a very,
cramming the football
very,
in,
very short window to be sad about. You
right.
know what I mean?
Nope, you're right. So. Well, yeah, I usually don't stay sad about that. I'm not one of those. I always find those people weird too, although I'm weird in my own way. But it's why are you mad? You didn't play in the game. The guy and the coach didn't yell at you after the game. Why are you so upset for? You had no effect on the outcome. You know, you should be mad.
I was there when I was younger. I was there.
I know a lot of people are. Yeah, that's why I said, like, I don't understand it. But then I'm sure people look at me and say, well, why aren't you mad? Look at me like I'm the weird one.
One more quick story. When we first met 20 years ago,
right,
and everybody was getting married, right? Yep. Like, you know, our friends the Millers and everybody, right?
Yeah, you don't have to name them.
All right, well, shout out to them. But another one of the couples that were getting married from the little friends group there, got married on Michigan State. And if you recall, I skipped the wedding to watch the Michigan State game.
You've changed a lot over the years.
I went to the reception because it was after the game. But that was 20 years ago. That was like, because that's where I was 20 years ago.
That was where your values were 20 years ago. Things have changed.
I'm a little different now. But that's you know, I was allowed to skip for that
yeah,
traditional
you're still married
wedding
to the same woman.
Yeah, it was her. Yeah,
although you two weren't married at the time, but you were together
at
that time.
Yeah, yeah, I think it was early enough in our relationship that she was like, "Yeah, okay,
we'll let this one go for now." You wouldn't be, if you wanted to do that now, you couldn't get away with
it. Oh no! It's
but
a different
world. You were also, you know, you're old now. You'd be easily able to skip the game. right, that's it. We've been prattling on. People are
Yeah.
tuned us out. So that's it. And so we should tune ourselves out. And you know, we've got a big one on Sunday. Let's hope they can get their way to 6-1. And so until next time, let's go Lions.